Yesterday, I was honored once again to lead the Remembrance Day service next door at Gilmore Gardens, as is our tradition. And after I got home from leading the service, I spent part of the day watching a couple of football and hockey games. Wasn't very happy with the outcome. But before any of those games were played yesterday, there were special ceremonies very much like the one we have done here today. And then the games started and we all got caught up in the excitement or the disappointment about the game. For most of us, it's pretty easy to go back to business as usual, even moments after pledging to remember those who gave their lives. But for those who lost loved ones, or who lived through the horrors of war, or whose loved ones returned with wounds of body, mind, and soul, it's not easy to simply carry on with our day. And as we continue to hear and watch the conflicts in Ukraine and Russia, in the Congo, in Israel-Palestine, and other places, we feel the helplessness and the profound grief that can sometimes overwhelm us as we consider the loss, the horrifying loss. Grief can rip us apart at the seams. It can be messy and overwhelming, affecting all aspects of our lives. And as we heard moments ago in his letter to the Thessalonians, Paul attempts to comfort the community who have lost members of their community. He assures them that their friends and loved ones haven't missed out on Jesus' return, the great event that they are all anticipating. Paul encourages them not to grieve without hope. Just as Jesus rose from the grave, we too hope for our own resurrection. We are confident that this world is not the end, this world of warfare and conflict, of heartbreak and pain, and that indeed we will be reunited, reconciled with Creator in that time to come. We can't escape grief, of course, but we can know that God will be with us in our sorrow. But honestly, such assurances can ring hollow in the face of the suffering that we see every day in places like Gaza. It's complicated as it is overwhelming. And so rather than share my own thoughts, which are honestly still so jumbled and heavy, I want to share with you the thoughtful reflections of our friend, Rabbi Laura Duin Kaplan, that some of you may remember spoke here in June. as she reflects in a recent blog on how to hold complexity as we consider the recent events in Israel-Palestine. There she is, Rabbi Laura, and her husband Charles, who you may remember. These are words that she wrote in the week immediately after the horrifying attack by Hamas on Israelis in South Israel. When grief, rage, and helplessness push your thoughts in every direction, how do we hold on to complexity? Last Friday night, I was a guest at a terrific Shabbat dinner. Together, we celebrated a successful High Holy Day season. We talked and laughed and sang. Children played across the room. It was like being in the Garden of Eden. We did not know what was happening just then in southern Israel. But in the morning, we knew. And once you eat from the tree of knowledge, there is no going back. We left Eden long ago for complexity. A young man from our Vancouver Jewish community, Ben Mizrahi, was murdered at the Supernova Music Festival. Movement elder Vivian Silver has been taken to Gaza as a hostage. We do not know how or where she is. Here in Vancouver on Wednesday morning, two young men were arrested for stalking and threatening young women leaving a Stand With Israel rally. Many local Jews are frightened. So it is surreal to realize that some people in Vancouver are not on edge. The news from Israel and Gaza does not affect them, not because they are anti-Semitic, but because it is just not their issue. Of course, I have experienced anti-Semitism, she says. A restaurant refused to serve me. Colleagues ignored my work. Antagonists and some supposed friends called me names. Acquaintances and strangers say ignorant and insulting things all the time. But honestly, I can live with all of this. One of my colleagues, however, has a different experience. His grandparents are Holocaust survivors. He survived the bombing of a Jewish community center. His sister just survived the music festival massacre. Over and over again, his family escapes those who want to kill Jews. So I know why this colleague dedicates his work life to the State of Israel. He believes that the only safe space is one controlled by Jews for Jews. But to create a Jewish space, other people get pushed aside. And the State of Israel does this in ways big and small. There are inconveniences, harassment, arrests, violence, and suppression of nonviolent protests. In Canada's not-so-distant past, British and French people did this to Indigenous peoples, and also to many new immigrant groups, including Jews and Asians. It is what nation states do. They try to hide the worst of it from their own populations, but when they can't, they try to justify it, and it is terrible. At work, I co-direct a program in Indigenous and interreligious studies. My colleagues teach about the settlers and Indigenous peoples of Canada. We know these categories do not map accurately onto the lives of Israelis and Palestinians. Rather, the analysis is more complex. Both Israelis and Palestinians are Indigenous, and both are deeply caught up in the colonial projects of large and powerful nations. Laura continues, I love the Jewish people. They are my extended family, a dysfunctional one, but so what? I love the Jewish people in all of our complexity, even when we agree on very little. And I love being Jewish. And even if I didn't, well, I don't know any other life. So how do I hold complexity? The challenges of conflicting thoughts and feelings and relationships. Mostly, I try to remember some core principles, and then I try to live into them. And friends, I wanted to share these words because I believe they are instructive and helpful for us all. Number one, don't create a new conflict. First, I am sure I do not want to be part of what some call the other Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That's the one where we outside the land express our pain and helplessness by arguing with and sometimes attacking others. So don't create a new conflict. Number two, be a non-anxious presence for yourself. I use my ability to be a non-anxious presence, not just with others, but also with myself. One practice is to observe my own feelings, and then, if I can, make choices about how to act on them. For example, many of my interfaith partners have reached out to me, but some have not. Do I feel hurt by that? Yes, I do. So I reach out to them. Do I feel stunned that my Christian colleagues are buzzing with business as usual? Yes, I do. So I tell them, life is not normal for us now. Three, know that morality is complex. I remind myself it is natural to have more than one moral perspective. One, for example, is immediate and visceral. It leaps up when those dearest to us are harmed. Another, more universal, comes from empathy and slow thinking. These two, at least, processes are at play inside of us, sometimes in harmony, sometimes in tension. Fourth, remember how politics works. Greedy narcissists exploit all of us. American politicians are not the American people. Sometimes they are at odds with almost all of us. Canadian politicians do not always speak for all Canadian people. Netanyahu is not the Israeli people. Hamas is not the Palestinian people. True, they did elect Hamas 17 years ago, but the party has not fulfilled their hopes, and there have not been any recent elections. Finally, fifth, value enduring relationships. I remember that relationships are key. Sometimes they matter more than anything else. Friends and colleagues do criticize me for being a peacemaker instead of angry. But here I am, and they are still with me. Modern war is not like the war we hear about in the Hebrew Bible. Oh, how we yearn for simple storylines, bad guys and good guys, humane motivations, precise goals, wise strategies, spiritual clarity. If only modern war was like this, then we could find our good guys and cheer them on. We could expect few casualties and a quick resolution. But modern war is not like this at all. Always more civilians than soldiers die. More children than adults die. Typically, people caught in the crossfire become victims of rape and torture and starvation and displacement. And that's why when it comes to war, I can't cheer, no matter how just I believe the cause to be. All I can do is pray that the inevitable ceasefire happens soon. That hostages and prisoners come home, and that ordinary people now torn by grief can live and love in safety. I'm not sure that any of us in this room can appreciate the courage it takes, actually, for a rabbi with close ties to Israel, the courage it takes for her to publicly say some of these words. This is the nature of war. I found wonderful, gracious irony yesterday as I realized that the young man from our local high school who came to play his trumpet for the service yesterday in Gilmore Gardens was a young man with a pretty distinct German accent. There is grace in that. As our former moderator, Reverend Richard Bott, has said, I'll invite you to read along in the next two slides. This is a day of remembrance, not simply of guts and glory, but of tears and loss. For when our only choice is war, then we have failed. Failed to be peace bringers, peace keepers, peace lovers. Let us stand in the face of oppression where we must. Let us hold fast to those who have lived the horrors of war. And continuing, as people of Christ, as ones who cry, peace, 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 let the torch we carry be the light of the one who reminded us to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. In its light, may we and the world find a little more healing, a little more hope, a little more justice, a little more love. Indeed, as the prophet Amos has said, let justice roll down like a river. The final word comes from another Jewish teaching that goes back a long time, the Talmud, and more specifically the Mishnah. Find this very helpful in the face of our helplessness. do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Amen.